This is WGRE 91.5 FM, Greencastle, Indiana.
Good evening, and welcome to Music for Life, Music from DePaul. This week, we talk to our band director, Dr. Craig Paré, and his guest soloist, Scotty Stepp, about an exciting new work they're bringing to the stage this week. We speak to students about the conference that they organized for the National Association for Music Educators. We have our 5-minute iPod and Question You Never Asked segments. And we speak to our chorus director, Dr. Gregory Risto, about an upcoming concert that features some music you might be surprised to hear coming from our stage. There are lots of exciting things happening this week in the School of Music, and we're glad you could join us for Music for Life. There are a lot of exciting concerts coming up in the School of Music, and none more so than the University Chorus and Chamber Singers Concert. Joining me in the studio is the director, Dr. Greg Risto. Welcome.
Thank you.
Good to have you here.
It's great to be here.
You guys have a really exciting program coming up.
Yeah, I think so. It's all British music. It's a lot of fun music, sort of a mix of highbrow and lowbrow all together in one.
Yeah, I tell you, if there was a concert that the community would love, it's this one. No matter what kind of music you like, you're going to love something in this concert.
I think so. And I think one of the things we find doing this program of all British music is that you look at the more highbrow stuff. For instance, we're doing William Byrd's Nunc Dimittis from the late Renaissance period. Is that there's a real connection between the art music of Britain and the more popular music. We're also doing some folk song settings and some Beatles arrangements as well.
Why is there such a big gulf between those in America and not so much in Britain?
You know, I'm not entirely sure of that, except to say that in Britain, as opposed to mainland Europe, there was sort of a void in the classical era and romantic era mm-hmm. in terms of classical music.
Right.
And so the separation that developed between art music and popular music in Europe and that carried over into the United States doesn't seem to have ever developed there in Britain.
Right. So there's a wide variety. Now, interestingly, you're doing a piece by Benjamin Britten, and he's also the composer of our
opera. That's right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So was that intentional?
You know, I thought long and hard about this. There's so much great choral music by Benjamin Britten. And next year will be his centenary.
Right.
So we will probably be doing some more Britten music there as well. These pieces, the flower songs, are very lighthearted, in a way similar to Albert Herring in that sense, and unusual for much of Britten's output. But just delightful pieces, and yeah, I think it's nice for the students to experience the different genres of the
right,
same composer
of the same
at the same
composer
time.
At the same time. What a great opportunity they have there. And John Rutter, I mean, you know,
yes.
Everybody loves John Rutter. I mean, tell me a bit about these two songs that you're doing with John.
Well, they're poems that many people may know. They're two songs from his 5 childhood lyrics. One of them is Sunday's Child, and the other is Sing a Song of Sixpence. Very likely nursery rhymes that you may have grown up with. And they're just delightful settings. In particular, Sing a Song of Sixpence is just a joyous romp.
John Rutter is not often embraced by the intelligentsia because
right, yeah.
He writes tunes.
I mean, he does.
It's beautiful music. We must stop this. No
tunes
more beautiful.
And great harmonies as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, absolutely gorgeous stuff. One could do worse than write beautiful music.
I definitely think so.
I think, though, for me, and I'm going to betray something here, but I think for me the most exciting thing is this King Singer set of the Beatles tunes.
I'm pretty excited about those. And Chamber Singers is really sounding, you know, knock on wood, cross fingers, in rehearsals sounding quite good. So I think those will come off well.
This is hard stuff.
I
mean,
it is.
You think, oh, well, this is the Beatles, you know, compared to Britten and everybody we've been playing earlier, this is the Beatles. But, man, that's hard. Those
it
arrangements
is.
Are very difficult.
And one of the things that they teach us, which is great, is when you're singing basically instrumental accompaniments, you have to get a large group of people to sound like one player at the piano.
Right.
And they're really teaching us a level of detail and articulation and sound that's great.
Right, this ability to absolutely meld to one mind.
That's right.
Many voices, one mind. What a challenge that is. And that album, I would encourage anybody to pick up that Beatles album. That's such fun.
Phenomenal music.
But it's so amazing how many instruments they can cover and how they can really sound like all of these instruments.
That's
and
right.
There are none on it. It's all voices.
It's all voices.
I remember the first time that I saw them do the Beatles tunes on tour, I had to go see them because I wanted to know how they made all those interesting sounds.
Right.
So that would be a highlight of that. And, you know, that's another point. Does anybody write tunes better than the Beatles? I mean, Lennon and McCartney.
That's great stuff.
Words and music. That's fantastic stuff. I think that, you know, we were joking with someone last week that maybe Lady Gaga would not be going on 400 years from now. But I have the sneaking suspicion that the Beatles will.
I think so. They've certainly survived the test of time so far.
Well, thank you for bringing this music to us, and we look forward to your concert.
Great pleasure. Thank
the
you.
The concert is?
The concert is Tuesday night at 7:30 p.m. in Kresge Auditorium.
We'll see you there. So this is just a taste of some of the music you'll hear at the chorus concert this week. This is the Kingsingers performing Blackbird from their Beatles collection. Dun, 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 dun.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arrive. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird fly, blackbird fly into the light. Dark black
This past weekend was an exciting weekend in the School of Music as we just completed the concerto competition, and I have joining me three of our six winners. Emily Barnash, welcome.
Thank you.
Josiah Rushing.
Yes, thank you.
And Chance Trotman Hewitt.
Thank you for having us.
Good to have you guys here. So this is a wide variety. We have a tuba player, a singer, and a percussionist. So let's start with you, Emily. What did you do?
I sang an aria from The Console by Menotti called The Papers Aria, or To This We've Come.
And you are a sophomore.
I am a sophomore.
So you win this thing as a sophomore. Where will you go from here? I just don't know.
Well, hopefully win it again.
Oh, there you go.
Papers, papers, papers. But don't you understand? What can I tell you to make you understand? My child is dead. John's mother is dying. My own life is in danger. I ask you for help, and all you give me is papers. What is your name? Mother Sorel, age 33, color of eyes, color of hair, single or married, religion and race, place of birth, father's name, mother's name, papers! 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 don't you say something? Aren't you secretaries, human beings like us? What is your name, Montessorel, age 33? What will your papers do? They cannot stop the clock.
And I think you are a multiple winner, aren't you, Josiah?
Yes, I am.
You won this last year?
Yes, in freshman years.
And what did you perform this year?
This year I played a marimba concerto by Anders Coppel, who is a Swedish composer, and it was written for a marimba competition.
Mm. And Chance, what did you do?
Well, that's hard to say. I buzzed my lips quite a bit. I played the Errold Plough Tuba Concerto, the first movement.
People might be surprised to see a tuba in front of the orchestra.
Just I'm surprised.
Yeah, yes, even you're surprised to see a tuba in front of the orchestra. It's a totally different sound from in front, isn't it?
It is, and it's such a wonderful experience to be able to play with the orchestra, let alone in Kresge Auditorium itself.
It just keeps getting better because you get the first excitement of actually playing in front of an orchestra, and then you win the thing, and that's exciting, and then you get to do it in a concert setting, which is even bigger yet. Thank you.
This was your first time.
Yes.
So were you surprised?
Actually, yes, I was. I've worked so hard. I've been working on this aria for probably a year, probably the most I've ever worked on anything. And so I'm just glad that my hard work paid off.
Yeah, it sure did. And Emily brought down the house during our Yo-Yo Ma weekend. She was selected to perform for a luncheon that we had one day. Or was that a dinner?
It was a dinner. Yeah.
Yes, we eat a lot here at the ball. It's hard to keep our meals straight. And how about for you, Josiah? Well, you've been here before. So you're back at it again. Was it different this time?
I felt very calm throughout the whole process, surprisingly. It was just a very different experience going through it again. I was surprised, though. I mean, you just never know what the judges will like and what strikes them as a winning contestant.
Mm-hmm. So. How about you?
Well, I'm with Emily. I've never felt more connected to a piece than the one that I competed with. And it's just very exciting as a brass player to win, but more specifically as a tuba player, I don't know.
This has to be one of the rare tuba wins.
Well, to my knowledge, I don't know.
Standing
for
all
tuba
hood. That's all right. So, and roughly how many people compete for this honor?
I think about
50 or 60
people. Yeah, it's amazing. So the top 10% get across the line. And when's your performance?
April 15th.
April 15th. So what happens now between the time that you win the thing in late February and the time you play the thing in April 15th? I mean, do you get a lot of chance to rehearse with the orchestra?
Well, I know we're supposed to meet with Professor Smith first before we actually start rehearsing and to go through the score and decide specific details on how we will perform.
And does he treat you like professionals in this case? Tell me how you're going to interpret this and how slow this will be and where you want to lift here and a pause there and a stretch this?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we have a lot of specific ideas, but he also has a lot of specific ideas on how to develop the relationship between the orchestra and the soloist.
Right. Yeah, there's something interesting about the concerto. People often think of it as the sole person taming the wild orchestra behind them, you know, because an orchestra is a thing that's, you know, lots of different people coming together to do one thing. But the concerto soloist is first among equals. I mean, you know, they get to step up front. And is that intimidating? Do they scare you? You're not in the orchestra normally.
I'm not in the orchestra. Being in the operas and stuff here, I've had plenty of opportunities to work with an orchestra, so...
So you just have the typical soprano. All these people are here to accompany me.
Absolutely not. No. Especially with this aria that I'm singing, it's so emotional that it's everyone who's working on it. When it's just me, my pianist, I couldn't do it without him. Yeah. And it's a whole group work together. So I can't wait to perform it with the orchestra and to have each individual person put their own interpretation into it as long as with mine.
Yeah, it's so different performing in front of an orchestra than in front of a pianist. So that's because there's just so many people up there. And for you guys, you move from the back of the bunch to the front of the bunch, you know, because I mean, as tuba and percussionists, you guys, they make a special back row for you folks. You're almost in a different zip code in the orchestra, and you're way back there in the back, and now you're right up front and center.
Well, normally I'm the only tuba. Uh-huh. But I can still hide underneath the trombones and the basses. But
there will be no hiding.
I guess I can't hide anymore.
Well, we'll hear you soon, and we look forward to your fine performances. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, everybody. My name is Erica Madsen. I'm having my junior recital on March 10th from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. in Thompson Recital Hall. I hope to see you all there.
Joining me in the studio for the question you never ask is Anna Gatula. Welcome.
Hello.
So what's our question this week?
What do I even wear to a concert?
Ah, that's a great question. What are people wearing?
For the most part, people are wearing business attire or business casual at the least. I've been to the Symphony Center in Chicago, and sometimes people will go so far as to wear tuxes and gowns, but I think that's more dependent on like if you're a donor or a sponsor of the orchestra.
It's interesting to see folks in tuxes and in gowns. I always like that, to tell you the truth, and I often wonder if it's not someone who's never been there before who thinks that they should be really dressed up for this event. And it's okay. I mean, we love it when you come to a classical music performance in a tux or a gown,
right.
But it's not necessary. In fact, I often see people wearing jeans.
Funny you mention that. The Baltimore Symphony Orchestra on their website, they said that they prefer you to be comfortable. And if you want to wear jeans, you wear jeans. If you want to wear a tux, you can wear a tux. But they want you to enjoy the music. And that's the most important part.
Right. I think we went through a period of time where people really took this seriously and they dressed up for it and they took great pride in it. Now I think it's a looser culture and they're happy to have audiences and they want people to come in and enjoy the music and they don't really care. In fact, the Indianapolis Symphony has this happy hour thing where the concerts last an hour and people come right after work and you know, people come in from jogging, they're still wearing shorts or whatever. You know, they're not uptight about that anymore. What about here in the School of Music? What should you wear when you come to a concert in the School of Music?
In the School of Music, it's polite to don't come in your sweats or, you know, the things you wore to bum around in school today, just to be polite to your professors and to the faculty.
So if I'm a College of Liberal Arts student and I want to come to a concert, do I have to get dressed up?
I wouldn't say get dressed up to the nines, maybe khakis, a nice pair of jeans, maybe darker jeans, and just look presentable for a concert setting.
You know, I think that's it. I think that you want to look presentable. But the truth is, if you show up at the Green Center for the Performing Arts, you come to Kresge or you come to Thompson and you're wearing sweatpants, we're going to let you in.
Right.
You know, we want you to come in and enjoy the concert. So we don't really care what you're wearing. But probably to fit in best, you ought to be wearing something slightly nice. Now, unless you're performing, you don't need the tux. Although, and do we always perform in tuxes and gowns?
No, we don't. We actually had a concert, the orchestra concert last semester, where they were required to wear jeans and black tops, and it was kind of interesting. Even Professor Smith was in jeans and he felt uncomfortable, but I thought it was pretty amusing.
Yeah, and that's cool. You know, a lot of times you'll see folks, professional performing groups, dressed very casually. And even symphony orchestras will have concerts where they're dressed incredibly casually, and that's all okay. So I think the moral of the story here is don't be uptight about what you're wearing. You're welcome no matter what you're wearing, but to fit in, slightly less than formal attire is just fine.
Right.
All right. Thanks for joining us. On Wednesday, March the 7th at 7:30 in Thompson Recital Hall, we're going to hear two performers that we've actually already heard this semester, but not together. And now we're going to have the opportunity to hear two pianists simultaneously. So I'm welcoming back to the studio Claude Zimmerman. Welcome.
Hello.
And Katja Kramer-Lappin.
Hi, thank you.
Good to have you back.
Delighted to be here.
So how is it different now? You know, we often think of pianists performing with another instrument, but piano with piano, is that unusual?
I think there's a beautiful repertoire for two pianos. Some people may not know that some of the great masterpieces like Haydn Variation, the Waltz of Ravel, originally were written for two pianos.
For two pianos?
Yeah, and some people, Brahms Quintet was first written for two pianos. I think it's there's three pianos, four pianos, and I've done monster recital like that. It doesn't sound very good. Because the piano being a vertical instrument is more difficult than chamber music with strings, because if you play not exactly together, everybody can hear.
Right, right.
You hear two sounds.
Yeah, you hear the flams, right.
Instead of one, so.
Right.
Perhaps another aspect, you know, just to add to it, is the fact that piano is a solo instrument per se, right? So we know that violin or cello would be much more natural put together with piano. However, the piano itself is already a solo complete, let's say, instrument. So putting two pianos is much more a commitment in terms of, you know, communication, you know, interaction and agreement, because they're two complete solo instruments put together.
Confrontation.
So I just want to outline that part. You know, it's not chamber music,
right?
Usual traditional setting.
So when people come to see a two piano concert, are you guys facing each other? For folks who've never seen this done before, we bring two grand pianos together, and they fit together nicely.
They do.
They fit like, then they call it nesting. Nest two piano. Some people do differently. I don't know how you would call it.
Parallel,
we practice in my studio, which has two pianos, so we look at each other, which is not fair, because I know where she is, I can see her hands, and when we're going to rehearse,
we're going to trust each other.
When you get to the point where you're actually watching each other across the pianos, you don't see each other's hands, you see each other's faces.
It's trust and our
just
ear.
Intuition, ears, and just
so it's easy. I would say sometimes it's easier to play four hands music, because you know exactly.
Right, now that's another situation where two pianists are playing, but there's only one piano between them. And we call that four hands rather than two piano work.
Right.
It's actually two pianists, but it's on a single keyboard. Now,
exactly.
Why not just do it on one piano? You've got all this music together, so why not just do it on one piano?
Well, because we would bump into each other.
Exactly, yeah, right. Piano four-hand music is written to allow two people to make room on one keyboard.
Right, it sounds more like an orchestra, I would say.
When it's
two pianos. Yeah, if we go to like Climax or some 3/4, you will see.
We're more comfortable because you are sitting in front of one instrument. When I play four hands music, you kind of on the left side, she would be on the right side because she looks better than me. But you can develop a bad back because you are not sitting comfort.
Yeah, we've enjoyed this semester a lot of the piano forehands that we've had with you in May, another of our piano faculty members, playing the Piazzolla and a lot of the fun stuff that you guys have brought along. Two pianists playing on two pianos is a new set of challenges. And what's going to be on this program?
We thought it would be a good idea. Katya is a native from Russia. I'm a native from France. I said, let's do a French Russian recital.
There you go.
I didn't see the poster yet, but it may say the Russian-French connection.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first idea, and we found one of the masterpieces, the Rachmaninoff Suite.
Number two, which is gigantic
typical
masterpiece.
Very thick and difficult and wonderful. And the Saint-Saëns, which is not played as much, but it's a beautiful piece on a theme of Beethoven.
So what is your favorite moment in this recital?
Good question. Well, I really adore the whole program, I have to say. This has been such a delight to work with Claude again and discover all this wonderful music together. To me, it's Rachmaninoff. It's my soul. It's what I grew up with. It's my home to an extent. My background, it's calling for, you know, reminiscence of childhood and all that music that I've been growing up with.
And what about you? So what's your... So she's already sided with her side now. Are you going to go the French way and tell us?
No, because I don't believe in... If you are French, you play better French music. But I trust her. She obviously... She understands the music, but I think I understand it too, and vice versa.
Right,
she
does a great job. So what's your moment in this recital? What's your... You don't have a favorite?
No, the whole thing is...
That's the perfect
question.
Answer.
No, I don't.
Or it's new every day, I suppose.
I find with the French, because it's a little bit witty, the way we exchange. I think visually the public will have fun because she would play very fast two notes and I would play very fast the next two notes.
Mm-hmm.
So ta-da, 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 it's like a stereo effect. If you listen, it should sound like one pianist. Ta-da, ta-da. And that's not trouble, but it's taking
Well, it's challenging.
Well, so this is such a great recital coming up that we can't even pick the highlights. We're just going to tell everyone to come to this thing on Wednesday, March the 7th at 7:30, and a good time will be had by all.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
We're going to hear a great piece this week by Claude and Katya, but on March 2nd, 2008, they performed one movement of this work here at DeBois. This is the Tarantella from the Second Suite, Opus 17 of Rachmaninoff.
Thank you.
Our next guest is Professor Caroline Smith. Welcome.
Thank you.
We're here to chat about this interesting thing we do at DePaul, where we have folks from around the country come to audition, and as part of that process, they get to hear some performances as part of the overnight. Our last one, they were actually here for Music of the 21st Century, and our next one will be for the opera weekend.
Yes.
And part of that is that the faculty perform, and Professor Smith is performing. What are you singing?
I am actually singing two pieces from Schoenberg's Breitellieder, which sounds very like Schoenberg. Yeah. What's your first thing that you think of when you think of Schoenberg?
Perhaps. Challenging.
Right, well, that and serialism, all 12
dissonance,
tones. Yes, all kinds of things. The cabaret songs are a bit different, and you will, if you don't know them, you will be somewhat surprised that indeed they were written by Arnold Schoenberg. Mm. But by all accounts, he actually really did love what he wrote.
Good.
They're written for mezzo, but told from the point of view of a man.
Why is it important that the faculty perform on these things?
I think it allows the perspectives to see the array of talent, of the standards that we hold dear here at DePauw in terms of performance. I think it's also important that they realize that faculty are active.
Right.
That they just don't stay in their studios and teach all day or whatever. That we are indeed artists that continue to perform, and it is a part of who we are, and it brings a certain dimension to our teaching.
You give lessons to these students while they're here as well.
Yes, we do. In fact, I think I would be correct in saying that we are one of the few schools that offer sample lessons to perspectives when they are here auditioning.
Yeah, it's amazing, because you'd pay $100 for this lesson in some places.
Exactly.
And we give them away.
We do.
And folks come up and to audition that weekend, and they get a sample lesson, and they get to hear a little bit about what we do here. So is that an interesting relationship? You're teaching a student, then you're performing for the student?
Yes, it is, from the standpoint that I suppose there's somewhat pressure in terms of springing to life after a busy day, because with voice auditions, we will have already heard voice auditions that day and done sample lessons. And then there is the opera. And then for those of us who will perform later, yes, we will then put on yet a different hat.
Right. And, you know, it's funny because we envision you all as divas. You know, you're lying around on your chaise lounge and someone's peeling a grape for you that moment that you step out to sing. When the truth is, you've been working all day. And at the end of a very, very long day, then you step out and sing.
Yeah. You're correct. And it becomes challenging many times to find that extra ounce of energy, or to hydrate when you can or rest when you can.
Right.
I think in the long run, it is very important to be able to share, not only with perspectives and their families, but also there usually are a fair number of the current School of Music students who do like to attend these events.
Right.
And again, it becomes important for them to hear their teachers perform and do what they themselves are learning to do.
Right. And these are open to the public, and it's great opportunity to see what an amazing array of talent we have here in the School of Music. So we look forward to your performance, and we thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Joining me for our 5-minute iPod segment is Dr. Brad Osborne. Welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Good. So you're limited to 5 minutes. Your iPod has malfunctioned. You're stuck on a desert island. You've got 5 minutes on your iPod. What's on it?
It's a really tough decision, but I'm going to go with Giacinto Scelsi's Quattro Pezzi su una nota sola. And for those of you who don't speak Italian, that is four pieces on a single note, written in 1959.
Wow. Okay.
Specifically the second movement.
And why this piece?
You know, it's maybe the last thing you'd expect. If I have to be stuck with 5 minutes of music, you would maybe want as many notes as possible to keep you interested.
Right.
But I'm picking a single movement that has only B and B quarter sharp for the entire piece.
Okay. So, and this will not lead to insanity?
I don't think so. You know, maybe. It kind of led to insanity for Chelsea when he was composing it. But that's right. Beside the point.
So this is an orchestral work.
Yes, it is.
And so who performs this work on your 5-minute iPod?
Well, my favorite recording is the Polish Radio Symphony.
All right, well, let's hear it.
Thank you.
There you are. The 5-minute iPod full of B.
And B quarter sharp.
And B quarter
and
sharp.
And lots of other frequencies that you probably heard that you can't really notate.
Thank you, Brad.
Thank you.
Joining me in Studio B is Kara Crockett and Heidi Moit. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we're here to chat about an exciting event we hosted a few months ago for NAFME. NAFME is the National Association for Music Education, which actually is the renaming of what was once MENC, Music Educators National Conference. And we hosted our own, so tell me about it.
On December 3rd, we hosted our second annual Music Education Conference here at DePauw. It was really exciting. Last year was kind of scary, having it be the first one we ever held. So this year we had a better idea of what was going on and what to do and how to plan for it. We brought in, how many speakers were there this year, Heidi?
I think there were about 20.
Mm-hmm. Wow, yeah. 20 yeah. speakers.
And these were teachers from across Indiana, from elementary through high school, public school, private school. We had a mix of teachers from different areas. We had elementary general, choir, orchestra, and band. Mm-hmm. They came in and we had predetermined topics that had discussion rooms set up, and they went in and had panel discussions with the members, and our NAFME members, right. And we invited all the NAFME chapters from across Indiana from other schools.
So this wasn't just for DePauw, it was organized by DePauw, but for all mm-hmm. the music ed majors in
yes,
Indiana.
Across
yeah,
Indiana.
A great opportunity. And I even heard great comments. People came to me as if I had had something to do with it and said, wow, that went really well. Mm-hmm. They commented on different presenters and the music, that were the topics that they presented. So it seems like it was a big hit.
Mm-hmm. It went really well this year. I was happy with it.
DePauw has a great music ed program, and I know we always have a lot of highly lauded graduates. Is this part of that process, these conferences?
The conference is a new thing that we just decided to do through NAFME last year.
And did you base this on a conference that you had been to, or how did you decide how the conference was going to be put together?
It's almost like a mini IMEA conference. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what we're basing it off of. Mm-hmm. So we took those ideas and the organization of it kind of with the panel discussions, and that's kind of where we got the inspiration for the setup.
I see. So tell me a little bit about the music ed program here.
Our music ed program, I think it's different from other schools in that it's really hands-on. Mm-hmm. Talking to other friends and other programs, I just hear, like, I feel like I have more real-life situations where I'm with kids working and actually teaching in front of classrooms. Mm-hmm. I think that's my favorite thing that stands out about the program.
And what year is this for you, Heidi?
I am a sophomore.
And so what have you found in the music ed program here at DePauw?
I think it gives you a nice base for trying out different types of music, because some people come in sure that they want to teach high school, and then they take two semesters and they're hooked on like pre-K. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of different opportunities for all sorts of experiences to see what you like and what you don't like, and to learn about all different types of music. So
what's your area?
My primary instrument is the flute, but my secondary is a cello, and I want to teach elementary strings.
Yeah. And how about you, Cara?
Right now I'm geared towards, I think, middle school level band and orchestra, instrumental in general, really.
So what brought you guys to music ed?
Well, my mom's an educator. I think it was just that education is a good base, and I mm-hmm. want to be able to influence children the way my music teachers influenced me. Mm-hmm.
I think it just comes down to kids for me. I love children, and I love teaching kids, and then when you put music with that, it's just the perfect combination.
Right. I taught public school for many years before I moved into the college ranks. I think the highest paid person in the world should be elementary school band directors. Because that takes quite a skill.
They are admirable.
Yeah, you know, and they're the cutest things in the world. You know, these little kids getting out instruments that are as big as they are, and they're trying to play along, but we can get some really interesting sounds out of a trombone when you're in fifth grade. Well, I'm glad you guys came in to chat about this, and thrilled with our success with the NAFME conference, and good to have you here in the show.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Dean McCoy.
Hi, my name is Jeremy Wong, and I will be giving my senior voice recital on Sunday, March 11th at 7:30 p.m. in Thompson Recital Hall. Hope to see you all there.
On Sunday, March 11th at 3 o'clock in Kresge Auditorium, we have a great treat in store. We will have
the DePaul University Band performing under their director, Dr. Craig Poiret, and also featuring guest soloist Scotty Stepp. Joining me in the studio are Craig and Scotty. Welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. Thanks for stopping by to chat a little bit about this upcoming concert. You've got some really exciting music on this, Dr. Poiret.
It's a great variety of dance music, of a concerto, some very lyrical, very expressive music as well, but a variety of composers.
I am moved by this piece that's coming up, I have to say. You're doing a work, American Elegy, by mm-hmm. Frank Ticelli. Mm-hmm. And this was a piece that was written in response to Columbine, correct?
It was, 1999, I believe, mm-hmm. yes.
I've never conducted that piece because that's a tough piece. My mm-hmm. hat's off to you. This is Frank Ticelli's attempt to make music speak in a place where words can't. How's that going?
That's correct. The students always, whenever I've conducted this, I think it's the second or third time I've done it here at DePauw, have never failed to respond to it because they remember back, and I think it's because of that recent history with Columbine. But I had a student approach me at the rehearsal yesterday asking if we might consider dedicating our performance to the students at Chardon High School in Ohio in response to the shootings that were there.
That's a very powerful and moving moment. But there's also some really exciting music on this, the Danza Finale.
Oh, we jump on stage with Danza Finale of Ginastera, part of his ballet, Estancia.
Yeah.
Every group enjoys playing this. It's part Malambo, part just Argentinian music. And English dances, we end the program with Malcolm Arnold's beautiful setting for four dances of English folk songs.
Yeah, it doesn't get much better than Malcolm Arnold. What a brilliant, brilliant composer. And Scotty, you're bringing new music to the wind ensemble world. Thank you for doing that. Tell us about it.
Yes, it's the composition by Yaska Gurwitch, who was a Russian composer. He was hired as a soloist with the Sousa Band in the early 20s, 1920, 1921. So he basically performed some of his own compositions and others' compositions at the time. What's interesting about this piece, when I was looking to have a student prepare it for concerto competitions, even though it's a concerto, he had not actually gotten around to writing the orchestral parts for the concerto. So he premiered it on piano with piano reduction with himself playing. And so when I went digging for the concerto actual band parts, they didn't exist. And I had somebody look in the Sousa Library and the Marine Band and even the Library of Congress and reached out to all my colleagues, and they just did not exist anywhere. So I decided it's a piece that gets performed quite a lot on piano and saxophone. So I thought, we need to have this arranged for a large ensemble. So Gurwitch was... basically, we don't know a lot about him. We know he was a saxophone soloist. He actually tried to get into military bands on trumpet and was denied. So,
so he switched to saxophone?
Yeah, so I guess he switched to saxophone is the story.
I'm not sure what that says about saxophone,
I know,
Scotty.
I know it. Yeah, that's for sure the truth. So he spent quite a bit of time, and actually after his time with the Sousa Band in 1920-21, he actually didn't go back to the Sousa Band, but made a career on vaudeville, vaudeville saxophone. And once you know 1927 rolled around, we had the advent of the audio on film, you know, film audio. Basically, that and the stock market crash in 1929, he kind of disappears. We don't hear anything else about him. That's all the information we
and
really have.
And so you decided to take this piece and have somebody transcribe it for a band.
That's correct. Yeah, I had it arranged by Daniel Powers. Actually, did the arrangement.
Thank you.
In a way, yeah. This is a world premiere then.
It is. It is certainly be the first time we've heard this piece with large ensemble. So
even he didn't get to hear it. He never got it to the Sousa
Band.
That's
correct. Right? That's correct. It never made it. He did it on, I think, a Sousa Band concert, but again, it was with piano.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, died rather piano. Young, I think, at age 42, and wondered if he'd lived longer, he would have been able to promote and even compose a little bit more.
Yeah.
Very interesting work, though.
Have you guys had fun doing this together? Is this your first time working together?
Yeah. Oh, yes. I've wanted to do something with Scotty for a long time. And we've been looking, actually, we've been talking the last couple of years for vehicles to bring this about, but Scotty had approached me a little over a year ago saying he was having this arranged, and the third movement was arranged at one, I think, last year.
Yeah.
But we wanted to wait till the whole work was done. And Dan, who's a colleague of ours, is principal violist with the Terre Haute Symphony and in residence composer with them, very good arranger and composer, took this on. And when was it? Early in the fall, I think, that we got the whole piece.
Yeah.
So realized we wanted to do it this year.
So this has been a busy year for you, Dr. Beret, with new stuff. Because you had Joseph Schwantner here with Recoil, which we'll get to hear, thank goodness, at this concert. And now you've got another new work. You're just bringing them on, aren't you?
Well, the students deserve it. This is a really good opportunity to premiere work and also work with one of our faculty members as a soloist.
All right. This sounds like an exciting concert. Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you.
Well, that wraps up our show this week, and we're glad you could join us at Music for Life, Music from DePauw. Our student producers are Sam Crocker, Adam Luman, Anna Gadula, and Phil Pasqua. Our show is produced and engineered by Matthew Champagne and recorded live in Studio B of the Green Center for the Performing Arts. I'm Mark McCoy. I'm the executive producer of Music for Life and Dean of the School of Music. And we're glad you could join us once again, and we hope that you'll join us next Sunday night at 6 p.m. on WGRE for Music for Life. You can also catch us on the podcast, available at iTunes, and you can email us at musicforlife@depauw.edu. We are incredibly excited that on March 18th at 3 o'clock in Kresge Auditorium, the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra will be performing here with their new maestro, Christoph Urbanski, who is only performing in the United States a handful of times this year, and one of those times is in Greencastle. They have an incredible program put together for us, including a concerto with concertmaster Zach Dupre, and as we mentioned last week, that incredibly haunting Barber Adagio for strings. But they're closing their concert with The Planets from Holst. So we'll close our show as well with this beautiful excerpt from Gustav Holst and The Planets.
It's Music for Life.